Thank you, gentlemen. The case is submitted. We'll hear arguments next in Commissioner of Internal Revenue against Engel and the consolidated case. He's got a great knack of making long sentences when we're conductors.
I asked Bill if Wallace was getting more like Mr. Cohn or Mr. Cohn like Mr. Wallace.
Little of each.
Little of each.
Phillips, I think you may proceed whenever you're ready.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, the issue in these consolidated cases is whether Section 613A of the Internal Revenue Code permits a lessor of oil and gas property who receives an advance payment upon the execution of a lease, the advance payment either in the form of a lease bonus or an advance royalty, is entitled to a percentage depletion deduction against those royalties even though no oil or gas allocated to that income is produced during the taxable year. The facts in both of these cases are not disputed. In the farmer case, in 1976, taxpayers leased the mineral estate of lands they owned in Texas to two companies interested in oil and gas exploration. Part of the compensation for that agreement was a substantial lease bonus to be paid in installments, and that was in no way dependent upon the actual production of oil or gas. Instead, it was based on the acreage of the lease. The taxpayers also included in that agreement a provision allowing them to receive royalties for any oil or gas actually produced. During the 1976 tax year, oil and gas was extracted from those properties, and a royalty was paid. Taxpayers in their 1976 federal income tax returns claimed a 22% depletion deduction for both the lease bonus payment and the royalty. In the Engel case, in 1975, the taxpayers assigned a lease they had to properties in Wyoming to producers in return for an overriding royalty. As part of the compensation scheme there, the taxpayers in this case received an advance royalty of $7,600. And during the 1975 tax year, there was, however, no production. Nevertheless, the taxpayers on their federal income tax returns for 1975 claimed a 22% depletion deduction for the advanced royalties that they had received. In both of these cases, the Commissioner assessed a deficiency by disallowing the percentage depletion deductions for payments that were received that had no relationship to any actual production during the taxable year. The farmers paid the deficiency and filed suit for return of the monies in the Court of Claims. The Engels, on the other hand, brought a proceeding in the tax court. The Court of Claims unanimously, and the tax court by a vote of 14-1, upheld the commissioner's decision and determined that Section 613A did not allow deductions in the absence of production during the taxable year. The Engels appealed the judgment of the tax court to the Seventh Circuit, which reversed. Both the commissioner and the farmers filed separate petitions to this court. They were granted and the case consolidated. Prior to 1975, it was clear that the lease bonuses and advance royalties at issue in this case would have been subject to the percentage depletion deduction. Prior to 75, under Section 611 of the Internal Revenue Code, which allows a deduction for a reasonable allowance for depreciation, in Section 613, which allows a deduction for gross income from the oil or gas producing property, this court had concluded the only statutory condition for allowance of the depletion deduction was the existence of gross income. And since this court had also concluded that advance payments on either in the form of lease bonuses or advance royalties were gross income from the property, the deduction was permitted.
Mr. Phillips, even after 75, are bonuses and advance royalties income from the property?
Yes, ma'am. I believe they would still remain as income from the property.
And that would be consistent with our decision in Herring, the old decision.
Yes, Your Honor. We do not dispute that decision in this case.
Well, is there anything in the statute we're talking about here or the amendments that specifically changes the definition of gross income to exclude bonuses and advance royalties or that overrules Herring?
Nothing that expressly does that. Congress did add subsection D to section 613 in 1975. Subsection D says you do not start with section 613, which is the provision that forces you to look at gross income. Instead, it says that you look first at section 613A, and only for so much of the production as you can demonstrate satisfies the requirements of section 613A, do you then come back into section 613 and apply the gross income tests under Herring, and for that matter, all of the commissioner's rulings regarding gross income.
Well, Congress didn't change the definition of gross income, is what you're saying, but it did state that the deduction for percentage depletion had to be with respect to production.
That's right, Your Honor.
Now, isn't the statutory language given better effect by allowing the deduction but just postponing it to the year of actual production?
Well, of course, that's not the issue in this case. They're seeking
to assert the deduction in this taxable year.
I'm
asking you if that isn't a better application of this statutory language.
Well, I will concede that that is a reasonable interpretation of the statutory language. The commissioner's view is that the focus in Section 613A on production in the taxable year seems to expect that it is the taxable year that they focus on. And when the income is acquired prior to actual production, the commissioner has concluded that Congress simply did not intend for that to be subject to the depletion allowance. As I say, I think just as in this case where the Seventh Circuit held that both interpretations are reasonable, I submit that you could probably make a reasonable argument with regard to the hypothetical you set. But I think it's important to make clear that regardless of how you decide your hypothetical, you would still deny the deduction for the taxpayers in these cases.
Well, how about the Congress? What if you have production in 1 year and no income until the next?
The commissioner has taken the position, at least with respect to the hypothetical he presented in his proposed regulations, that if you have, say, $100,000 of production in 1 year and $85,000 of income in that year and $15,000 of income in the next year, he will permit you the $15,000 deduction.
In the next year, even if there isn't any production.
In the next
year. So he doesn't apply the statute literally either.
Not precisely. I think the exception made for that, and it's not clear that he would allow that if all of the income were derived in a separate year, only if a small portion is. And in addition, it is clear that distinction that the commissioner has drawn is fully consistent with the intention and purpose of Section 613A. That is, Congress's dominant concern was to assure the production of oil and gas, the extraction of oil in hand. And certainly under the hypothetical that the commissioner has proposed, you have production in hand, and so therefore he has decided to go ahead and allow that. Certainly no taxpayers are likely to complain about the proposed regulation.
But he, is it clear that he would not, if you have advanced royalties in 1 year, and the next year you have production, he wouldn't allow the depletion of the royalties received in the prior year?
That seems clear, yes, Your Honor.
He will not do that.
He will not do that. You will be allowed cost depletion for the income
yes,
that you've
yes.
received in the prior year.
Yes.
And he will not allow the special advantage, frankly, that is afforded through percentage depletion.
Mr. Phillips, let me just be sure I understood you correctly. You said the dominant purpose of Congress in granting this exemption was to be sure there was some production of oil and gas. It's unrelated to any particular time period.
Well, during the taxable year, I believe that Congress's predominant concern was some production prior to the income.
And you
I think, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I'm just wondering about whether there was this refinement of the general objective that there must be some production during the lease term, which would be consistent with the old law. And it really wouldn't make much difference whether you had a year, the beginning or the end of the year, at least, where there was no production under that, whereas there's a difference under your proposed regulations.
Well, of course, the proper result in this case doesn't really hang on whether or not the proposed regulations are consistent. It seems to me we're still dealing with this particular case, which is a situation where we have income and no production. And so,
of course, if there's no production during the entire life of the lease, even the taxpayer would agree he'd have to give back the...
That's correct, but it seems perfectly consistent with the statute to expect that Congress may have preferred to have production in as quickly as possible and not postpone it 5 to 10 years.
One of the purposes of Congress was to discourage the practice of leasing with an advance royalty payment scheme in it?
Not to discourage it particularly, but simply not to provide the extraordinary encouragement that percentage depletion would otherwise grant.
Well, it is correct, is it not, that the commissioner's position will discourage this particular form of lease?
From the prior practice, yes, it will not be as readily adopted.
Of course, for anybody
other than a small producer, it wouldn't be
that's
a
right.
very
we're
profitable.
We're only talking about small producers,
that's
but this may in turn make it more difficult for small producers to enter into advantageous leases.
I don't think so, Your Honor. The small producer retains the very substantial advantage that comes when there is production on the property.
Right, and so he loses the advantage if the lessee cannot assure him that there will be production in the year in which he is first receiving royalties.
That's correct. That's correct. But we'll still nonetheless, but most royalty owners, I would imagine, would still realize that a small producer, if there is reasonable likelihood of production, will offer the advantages of percentage depletion that weren't available if you used a large producer. So that all this does is make the large producer, small producer equal with regard to advance payments for which no oil is produced and for which Congress presumably had no real concern or interest in.
We'll resume there at 1 o'clock. Mr. Phillips, you may resume.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court. In 1975, Congress in the Tax Reduction Act eliminated, for the most part, percentage depletion allowance for oil and gas. After 1975, the existence of the percentage depletion allowance was no longer contingent exclusively on the existence of gross income. Instead, Congress added subsection D to section 613, which expressly requires the taxpayer to determine the availability of any deduction, percentage deduction that is, under Section 613A first, and then determine on the basis of whether you comply with the requirements of Section 613A how much of the deduction generally specified in Section 611 will be computed specifically under Section 613. Congress in Section 613A permitted percentage depletion for a royalty owner, such as the taxpayers in these cases, who leased to an independent producer, quote, with respect to so much of the taxpayer's average daily production of domestic crude oil as does not exceed the taxpayer's depletable oil or natural gas quantity. Average daily production is determined by dividing the aggregate production for the year by the number of days in the taxable year. And the depletable quantity is an arbitrary number that Congress had set in order to limit the maximum amount of production and to guarantee that the producers were, in fact, small producers. As the majority of the tax court held, Section 613A places repeated emphasis on the concept of production. And production itself commonly means extraction from the ground. And therefore, it is fair to read the statutory language itself as requiring actual production during the taxable year. And accordingly, the taxpayers in this case, who cannot attribute any of their income to actual production during the taxable year, are not entitled under the plain meaning of the language of Section 613A to a percentage depletion deduction.
Mr. Phillips,
What do you make of the language immediately preceding the critical section, where it says with respect to?
Our understanding.
Are you familiar with that?
Yes, our view is that the with respect to is the way to describe how much production you get to use for the percentage depletion. That is, you get with respect to so much production depletion under 611 to be computed under Section 613. The with respect to language is actually the pivotal language in our mind in determining that production is crucial. Because it is only with respect to so much production that you are allowed any kind of a percentage depletion.
I don't quite read it that way. It says, except as provided in subsection D, the allowance for depletion under Section 611 shall be computed in accordance with Section 613 with respect to so much the taxpayer's average daily production of domestic crude oil as does not exceed the taxpayer's depletable oil quantity. That suggests to me that there may be other instances of depletion allowance that aren't embraced within that language. Do you disagree with that?
Well, no, I agree with that. It is clear that it is with respect to both that you have to have some production and with respect to so much as does not exceed the depletable quantity. So there is anything over 2,000 barrels in 1975 will not be with respect to which you can deduct under the percentage depletion, just as if you don't have any production, it is with respect to zero production that you allow the depletion. So it's only what I would read that language as saying with respect to whatever number between 1 and 2,000 barrels are produced by primary means of extraction. Of course, the taxpayers are still entitled to cost depletion under Section 612, but in our reading of this plain meaning of the statute, they are no longer entitled to percentage depletion, simply as a matter, as a simple arithmetic means, that is, the numerator of aggregate production is zero divided by any number obviously equals zero, and so that with respect to how much production is there a deduction, the answer is zero.
Mr. Phillips, does the commissioner require the lessees to capitalize lease bonus and advance royalty payments that they make and to take a percentage depletion allowance against them in the year of actual production?
Well, he does not permit them. They have historically not been permitted to take the lease bonus and advance royalty and use percentage depletion on that. He does require them to capitalize it as a straight deduction. And he continues to take the view that the lease bonus and advance royalties are not subject to the percentage depletion allowance to the lessee. That, by the way, is compelled, I think, in the House Committee report in 1974. We submit that the result compelled by the statutory language is equally supported by the only relevant legislative history in this case. When the Tax Reduction Act was passed out of the House Committee in 1975, it contained no provision with regard to oil and gas depletion. An amendment on the House floor completely abolished oil and gas depletion, which passed. The bill then went to the Senate. Again, the Senate Finance Committee reported out a bill, but again contained no provision for oil and gas depletion. And on the floor of the Senate was the amendment added that conforms basically to Section 613A. All of the courts that have considered this issue below have concluded that reading the legislative history in 1975 provides no useful insights into the solution of the problem presented by these cases. That is, there is nothing in there that tells you how to treat lease bonus and advance royalties. However, in 1974, during the prior Congress, indeed the last session of the prior Congress, and merely 4 months prior to the date that the conference committee announced the final Section 613A compromise, the House considered legislation that had been proposed by Wilbur Mills, then the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee, that is strikingly similar to Section 613A. That legislation provided a percentage depletion deduction that was permissible, again, with respect to so much of the taxpayer's average daily production of domestic crude oil, as in that bill, did not exceed 3,000 barrels. Average daily production in that legislation was defined precisely as it is defined in Section 613A. When that bill was reported out of committee, the House Ways and Means Committee made the only statement that is directly relevant to the appropriate disposition of this case. And the House Committee's report states, thus the deduction applies to gross income attributable to oil which is sold or removed from the premises and not to other types of depletable income.
Mr. Phillips, does any of that history address Herring, the commissioner?
Directly?
Yes.
No, Your Honor, it does not.
Your answer to the argument based on Herring
is that it obviously didn't require Congress to have considered the prior law in order to change that law. If it adopts language in the statute that is just completely inconsistent with the basic ground rules that gave rise to the Herring decision, which we submit it did, then Herring is just no longer appropriate as a basis for decision. The House Committee report says expressly, for example, a lease bonus paid to the lessor of mineral lands in a lump sum or in installments is independent of any actual production from the lease and thus would not be within any of the exemptions. That is directly inconsistent with Herring, and it's clear that Congress meant to change the rules, that income alone was no longer the basis for percentage depletion. What was necessary now is actual production, and that in the taxable year. I take it as self-evident, frankly, that if that legislative statement had been included by the senators who proposed the amendment in 1975 on the floor of the Senate, that these cases would not be here today. There is simply no way to mask the clear intent of the House Ways and Means Committee 4 months before this actual legislation was passed with regard to exactly what this language means. And it is the with respect to the taxpayer's average daily production that is the pivotal language in the 1975 legislation under our theory. That is precisely the same language that the House Ways and Means Committee was interpreting in 1974. We submit there is simply no justification for doing as the Seventh Circuit did, to disregard the only clearly relevant legislative history we have to tell us what that statute meant and intended in the cases we have before us today. Nor, indeed, do we believe that such an extraordinary result as the Seventh Circuit reached can be justified simply on the basis that Congress failed to make reference to the prior law with regard to lease bonuses and advance royalties in 1975.
Mr. Phillips, can I interrupt you once? I'm looking at the language from the 74 legislative history you're relying on. Say you had a five-year lease with a five-year, lease bonus paid in five installments, equal installments. And there was production in the first 4 years of the lease, but not in the fifth. Would there be any depletion allowance on the fifth installment of the lease bonus under your view?
No, Your Honor, there wouldn't be any depletion allowance on any of the lease bonus under the interpretation of the House Ways and Means Committee in 1974, because they say that lease bonus is clearly not attributable to income from production. It has nothing to do with production. It's based on acreage, and therefore it is not subject to the depletion allowance, percentage depletion allowance. Still subject to cost depletion, but not percentage any longer.
So that when we're looking at lease bonuses, we don't care whether there's production or not.
That's correct, Your Honor. I believe that's the fair interpretation of the House Committee's report. The Seventh Circuit believed that it could reach a contrary result. The Seventh Circuit, in reaching its decision, first stated that under the statutory language, the commissioner's interpretation was perfectly reasonable. Under the legislative history in 1975, the commissioner's interpretation was perfectly reasonable. That recognized that the 1974 legislative history, if considered, provided substantial support for the commissioner's interpretation. And yet blinded itself to all of that and decided the case on the basis of the failure of Congress in 1975 to expressly state that it was going to overturn prior law. In the context of what Congress was doing in 1975, that simply ignores the reality of that congressional session. Congress acted within 6 days between the time that the Senate proposed the amendment and the House Committee adopted the House Senate Conference Committee adopted a compromise solution to this proposal, that legislation came out. In the context of eliminating almost all percentage depletion allowance, it is just simply not reasonable to assume that anyone would have worried about this very small portion of the problem of percentage depletion. The future of percentage depletion simply was in no way contingent on the treatment of the royalty owners' advance royalties and lease bonuses. And therefore, it is not appropriate to rely on the failure to make comment in 1975 as the basis for deciding this case. In 1975, Congress was reacting to a severe oil shortage, which caused the price of deregulated oil to skyrocket. It responded by eliminating the extraordinary tax advantages that percentage depletion had previously granted in most situations. Congress decided to continue to give some depletion protection to independent producers, but it quite reasonably withheld the percentage depletion advantage to situations where oil was actually extracted during that taxable year, and even then only so long as the amounts reflected a small producer. In all other situations, Congress simply relegated the taxpayer to the cost depletion that most other taxpayers are able to use in most other industries. Taxpayers here were entitled to the latter. They were not entitled to the former. The Federal Circuit correctly so held, and its judgment in Farmer should be affirmed. The Seventh Circuit's holding should be reversed.
May I ask another question? I'm just wondering how important the words lease bonus are, and whether, and I guess we have expressly a lease bonus in one case and an advance royalty in the other case. Is it conceivable that the two cases could be decided differently, government win in one and lose in the other?
Well, it is conceivable that we could. I don't think the Congress intended to draw a distinction. I think if...
Well, to the extent that you rely on the lease bonus language in the 74 report, does that language apply with the same force to the advance royalty situation?
Well, since advance royalties and lease bonuses had historically been treated essentially the same, I would say that there's no reason to draw a distinction between them simply because the Congress, in its example, referred to lease bonus. If you take the more general statement that precedes the specific
example.
You're, in
effect, arguing that history really has changed, that the old law was changed by not just limited to a certain category of persons. I don't remember the name of the case.
Herring?
The Herring case.
Well, no, I don't believe so, because it seems to me that there is still the question of what is gross income and whether this is gross, and if you have gross income, whether you're entitled to depletion is there. I don't think that's been modified at all. It simply tells you that it has to have some production that goes with it, and that's just simply adding a precondition. Once you satisfy the precondition, Herring applies just as it always had. I don't think Congress had intended to change that, nor would I expect them to have made reference to that portion of it. I mean, the way I think that it is, the reason I think it inappropriate to distinguish between lease bonus and advance royalties is because the sentence that precedes the specific example talks generally about attributing income to production, and that's just as true in an advance royalty as a lease bonus. That is, an advance royalty with no production is not the income is just not attributable to any production.
Well, not until there's production, at least.
Right, but and if
under
that production
their view,
is not
once there's production,
sure.
It
but
could
be if that's not done in the taxable year, then you can't. Then the statutory language itself makes clear that you ought not to be entitled to the percentage deduction in that year.
Well, but the thing that troubles me about your emphasis on years are, if I understand the papers correctly, there are situations in which you would agree that in a fifth year of a lease, there could be a depletion allowance based on production during earlier years in the lease. A fifth year in which there was no production in the fifth year.
If there were income.
Yes.
And not and production. The commissioner's interpretation, the commissioner's proposed regulation does suggest that that's true, that he will accept at least some portion of income in a subsequent year, although the production precedes it. And the facial inconsistency with the statutory language, as we read it in this case, is conceded. But it does seem to me that the notion of allowing the deduction in that situation is fully consistent with the purpose here. That is, the purpose is to have oil. And that purpose is fully served. So, and as I say, I doubt that any taxpayers will complain about the commissioner's interpretation on that side. They seem only to be complaining about the commissioner's interpretation on this side. And moreover, it doesn't seem to me that the tail of how you deal with that problem should wag the dog of how you deal with this essential problem here. That is, we still
have to decide this case first.
It
will have an effect on the way in which people will negotiate their leases. That's what I'm trying to think through.
I think it will have some effect on the way they negotiate their leases, but I don't think it undermines the basic purpose, which was to encourage independent producers to continue producing. That is, because they still have the basic advantage when you get the income, when you have actual production and actual income, you still get a significant advantage with percentage depletion that you
not
simply
other,
don't
that,
get with otherwise if you have a large
other
producer.
People don't get that.
That's right. Large producers don't get that. So if you go to Amoco or Exxon or someone and ask them to drill your hole, if you get a lot of income,
did the Seventh Circuit believe that your suggested interpretation and the interpretation submitted by your opponents, both were reasonable?
Yes, Your Honor. They said exactly, they said precisely what they said. The statutory language supports either interpretation.
And yet they turned down your interpretation.
That's correct, Your Honor. That's an extraordinary result in our view.
Did they give an explanation for rejecting yours or for saying that they need not give you any deference at all?
They gave no explanation for why the commissioner ought not to receive some deference in interpreting his statute or why the tax court should receive no deference in interpreting the statute. Simply said that failure of Congress in 1975 to make express reference to prior law was the basis for deciding against the commissioner. Submit the commissioner's interpretation
well,
should be upheld.
If you look at the conference committee report, because this language was added in a floor amendment, so we don't have a lot of history to go by. And if you just look at the conference report for the language that was actually adopted, there's no indication that Congress intended to amend the definition of gross income from property.
Well, I don't
or
believe
to change the prior result. It just isn't there. You can't find it.
Well, excuse me, there are two answers to that. First, we're not arguing that the definition of gross income from property has been changed, nor need it be changed in order to support our interpretation. Second of all, it seems perfectly unreasonable to assume that the conference committee, 6 days after the Senate amendment, would be sitting down trying to sort out these problems. The problem that the conference committee addressed itself to were twofold. First, the conference committee said, we're going to keep percentage depletion at 22%. That's how we resolved the difference between the House and the Senate versions. Second of all, we're going to keep the depletable quantity at 2,000 barrels. That's the difference between the 3,000 and the 1,000 barrel proposals that were in the Senate. You would expect in the conference they're going to explain just what the differences were and how they were resolved. And that's all the conference report discusses. And that makes sense in context. But that's no basis for saying that our interpretation shouldn't be adopted simply because Congress didn't go further and explain every other problem that might exist.
It also indicated that it intended to retain the percentage depletion privilege for the independent producer. That's what it intended.
Well, no, it said it intended to retain the percentage depletion at 22% for 2,000 barrels. What it retained was the Senate's version of 22%, and it retained the Senate's version of 2,000 barrels. Doesn't say anything about intending to retain any more than that. And even the Seventh Circuit, in its decision in this case, declined to read into retains in the context of that conference committee report anything other than that it's out there and that it explained what the compromise in conference was about. Thank you.
Very well. Mr. Donnelly.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court. I represent the Engels, who are the respondents in number 82599. The Engels received $7,600 in advance royalties in 1975, a year in which there was no production in the sense of physical extraction from the oil and gas properties that were involved. The Engels nevertheless claimed under the independent producer exemption, section 613 capital A little c of the Revenue Code, which was added under the Tax Reduction Act of 1975, claimed the percentage depletion allowance. The tax court decided against the Engels' position, finding that the statute had overruled the decision of the Herring case and required production, that is, that the payment must be directly related to production. The Seventh Circuit reversed, finding that there was no production requirement imposed by the statute, but rather that the statute imposed a limitation only on the amount that would be eligible for the deduction, in effect defining who is the small independent producer that was to be available to him a continuing percentage depletion allowance, though Congress had intended to eliminate the depletion allowance for the large oil company. It is the Engels' position that the language in Section 613A, which requires the deduction to be computed in accordance with Section 613, requires that the deduction be based only on gross income from the property. The advance royalties are gross income from the property. There is nothing in Section 613A that says that the deduction is to be calculated on the value of production. And Mr. Phillips' position would suggest that the calculation is to be based on the value of production. Since we contend that prior law was to be retained, FAR, the small independent producer, brief summary of prior law would be in order. Under the Herring case, there was no production requirement. Lease bonus and advance royalties were eligible for percentage depletion in the same manner as the proceeds of actual extraction. There was a recapture rule, I think, that has been referred to before. If by the termination of the lease, there had not been production sufficient to justify the advance royalty or lease bonus, then under the tax benefit rule, the amount of depletion previously claimed would be recaptured.
Mr. Donnelly, wouldn't it be a reasonable position for the commissioner to require that the deduction, even if you're right about the fact that bonuses and advance royalties are part of gross income, wouldn't it be reasonable for the commissioner to require that the deduction be taken in the year of actual production?
Well, I think that would be reasonable, but under the statute cannot be done. The depletion allowance, percentage depletion allowance, can only be taken in the year in which the proceeds or the money is received. It has to be based on the gross income from the property. There is a limitation contained in Section 613 that it may not exceed 50% of the net income from the property. So that the deduction, its calculation, requires that it be taken in the year in which the money is received, cash basis taxpayer. It would have been reasonable, I think, for Congress to have drafted the statute so that at the time there is production, the depletion allowance be taken.
Well, and maybe that's what Congress did do.
Well, Congress, you see, under the 1974 bill that Mr. Phillips referred to, there was no requirement that the calculation be made in accordance with Section 613. That, however, is in the 1975 bill. The statute does not say compute the deduction with respect to the barrelage amount allowed under Section 613A(c)(1A). It says the calculation is to be made in accordance with Section 613, that is, with respect to the gross income from the property, on so much of the production as does not exceed the barrel limitation. And our position, of course, all along has been zero production doesn't exceed 2,000 barrels. And if we had zero production and we had gross income from the property, the calculation is simply to be based on the gross income from the property. Only in the event that our production should exceed 2,000 barrels a day would the limitation come into play. We believe that we are indeed then what Congress intended to define as a small independent producer. Statutory history, I think, has been given. We believe that since the independent producer's exemption was inserted into the law as a result of a Senate amendment, that the Senate committee report is of particular relevance. That report indicates that it was the intention to retain percentage depletion for the small independent producer. We believe that this meant that prior law was to be retained as to the calculation the exemption for the small independent producer, that the words in accordance with Section 613 fully reflect the intention of Congress to make the calculation in accordance with prior law.
Mr. Downey, can I ask you a question?
Yes.
I will reveal my ignorance, but is there another definition of the term small independent producer in the statute other than the...
No.
This is what defines
this, it. This is the definition.
Does
the statute prevents large retailers and large refiners and large producers, if you fall into any one of those categories, from being eligible for the small independent producer exemption. The intent was to eliminate percentage depletion for the large oil company.
Well, explain this to me then. Why would not this language permit one of the giant oil companies to take this deduction to the extent that their production did not exceed this limit?
Well, most of the giant oil companies are retailers and refiners, or one of the two. If you are a retailer or a refiner, you cannot use the small independent producer exemption. If you are a producer only, the oil company would be eligible for the exemption within the limitations of the small independent producer exemption.
So the only meaning of the word small is that if you're otherwise an independent producer,
that's right,
then you may take depletion up to the maximum limit set here.
That's correct. If your production limits do not exceed that total, you're considered a small producer and you're entitled to the full depletional
percentage
depletion.
Seems to me that tends to support your view that this is a limit rather than a basic condition for eligibility.
We believe that it does support that view.
I see.
In the case of our client, our client received $7,600 in advance royalties based on the price of oil as it existed in 1975. That would have been the equivalent of about less than one barrel of oil per day, as compared to the 2,000 with which the statute allows.
But you don't say that, do you? That is, if there's never any production, that you can. That you can have percentage depletion on advanced royalties or bonus payments.
Justice Wright, there will be recapture. If by the termination of the lease the production had not...
So there is a precondition to claiming percentage depletion on this income other than being a small producer.
The precondition...
There has to be some production, doesn't
it? The precondition of claiming percentage depletion on advanced royalties has always been that ultimately
production. So the answer is yes.
So as to avoid recapture.
Okay, yes.
Right.
Your answer is yes. It's the same precondition that existed before 1975.
That's correct.
That's right.
The effect of the government's position on us, I think, can be expressed by an example. Let's assume that there were $7,600 in advance royalties received in 1975, a 5% royalty rate, and no physical extraction. In 1976, $200,000 in value of oil is extracted from the property. $10,000 then in royalty would have been earned, 5% of $200,000. The $7,600 advance would be offset against the $10,000 earned, and the balance of $2,400 would be owing. Further assume the $2,400 is paid in 1977. The government's position would give us no depletion, percentage depletion deduction in 1975 because there was no physical extraction. We would get no percentage depletion deduction in 1976 because there was no gross income from the property. And in 1977, I thought that under the government's position in this case, we would get no percentage depletion during that year either. However, Mr. Phillips has said that the government would condescend in that year because there had been prior production to grant depletion on a reasonable quantity, whatever that is, whatever he may mean by that, of the gross income from the property which is paid during that year. We think the statute does not work as to us. The statute also does not work as to an extractor who, for example, receives $100,000 in advance in 1975 in anticipation of production in 1976. He gets no deduction, percentage depletion deduction in 1975. In 1976, let's assume there's a $200,000 in production. The $100,000 advance is offset. It's previously been paid. The gross income from the property is only $100,000. This is all he can take percentage depletion with respect to. We think that the difficulty with the government's position is found in the first paragraph of the question presented in its original brief, where the question presented is stated, Section 613A2A, and actually that's a misprint, it should be A1A, of the Internal Revenue Code of 1954, allows a percentage depletion deduction to be computed, eliminating the words, in accordance with Section 613. The significance of those words being that the deduction has to be calculated on the gross income from the property. The government, however, eliminates those words when it paraphrases this section of the code. They then go on. With respect to eliminating the words so much of the average daily production of oil or gas, eliminating the words as does not exceed defined in terms of production for any taxable year. The government attempts to convert the statutory language, which imposes merely a limitation, into a production requirement. This is the same thing the government attempted to do at the time of Herring some 50 years ago, to impose a production requirement. But a production requirement does not work with a statute that bases the calculation on gross income from the property. Thank you.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the Court. We represent two taxpayers, ranch owners in West Texas, by the names of the Farmers and the Subs. They executed oil and gas leases in 1975, providing for installment bonuses. They received a part of their installment in 1976. In that same year, they also received a royalty paid as a part of the actual production from their leases. Not only is that a differentiation that one should note as a fact, but also there is actual proof in this case that as the amount of the bonus goes up, the amount of the percentage royalty goes down, and vice versa. As a matter of economic logic, that must be. And may I digress from what I would otherwise say to perhaps address what Justice Stevens was asking about. There is a very pertinent point to be realized that a person that does not have substantial economic means is going to take the bonus because of the certainty of income, regardless of the depletion allowance, because he must have those dollars in hand and he cannot afford to gamble on the royalty that might ultimately be greater if he said, I forget the bonus and I'll take the greater royalty in the future. Now, with respect to the reply brief of the government, which was filed just a week ago, we believe it would be profitable to spend a few moments on that reply brief. And in that connection, we respectfully ask the Court, if it should choose to do so, to look at the copies of the Section 613A and the bill in 1974, We thought it might be more convenient for the court if it could lay those two down side by side. Because what that shows one, when it is done, Section 613A, and it's unfortunate they put a cap A there because of a section reference. It's not a small a in parentheses, but a 613 cap A.
Mr. Kelly, are you referring to a particular point in the briefs here that you would like to have us look at?
Justice Wainquist, what I am referring to is where the court, rather the brief says there is remarkable similarity between the 1974 bill and the act that came out of 613A. And if we could look at the act for a moment, then I would like to compare it to the other bill and show the difference.
Where should we turn to look at the act?
In the application for certiorari, the last page, page 93, has that. It's actually at the top, starts at page 92.
That's 93 in your case.
In the application for certiorari in our case, yes, sir. The point that we desire to make is that Section 613A says that without regard to Section 613, the old act granting depletion, we will have two exceptions. One is an exception for certain domestic gas wells. And then it starts off with respect to the exception for certain gas wells with this very important language, clinching language. The allowance for depletion under Section 611 shall be computed in accordance with Section 613 with respect to, and then it mentioned two types of natural gas that will still get percentage depletion. Then it drops down in subsection C to the exemption for independent producers and royalty owners. And it starts off the same way. It says, except it's provided in subsection D, which is irrelevant for our question, the allowance for depletion under section 611 shall be computed under in accordance with section 613. Now, why did Congress choose that cross-reference, this web of cross-references that is woven into the fabric of the Internal Revenue Code? It's because Congress wanted to tell us that we want to go back to 613. We want all of the lore, the regulations, the baggage, the decisions of this court, including Herring, in order that we can see when we go to the limitation that Congress meant it for this court to look and meant for the administration of the Internal Revenue Service to look at what it has said before over a period of 50 years with respect to Section 611 through Section 613. That's the important thing. And when the legislative history of the prior bill in 1974 is referred to by the government and saying that there you said you can't have the bonus, the depletion on the bonus. Look what that bill said. It doesn't have anything, not a word about a cross-reference to Section 611, not a word about a cross-reference to Section 613. There's the all-important difference between the bill that the IRS would have us look at and the actual enactment in 1975. The legislative history may be different, but it's for a very good reason. The statutory language is entirely different and without the vital, the all-important cross-references. Now, a moment more about legislative history, if legislative history should be relevant here. In the original briefs of the government, they cited us two cases saying that we should look back from one Congress, the Congress in 1975, to a prior Congress in 1974. They cited two cases. In our briefs, we showed that neither of those cases were applicable. Now they come along with the Dalahite case, the famous Texas City disaster case involving the Federal Tort Claims Act. In that case, this court considered a prior legislative report to the Congress that enacted the Tort Claims Act. But why? It was because the statute, the bill in the prior Congress was exactly the same. And the legislative report was exactly the same, word for word. And the only reason they leaped forward back a year is because they wanted to pick up some testimony with respect to the prior bill, because the bill that was actually enacted never had any legislative hearings. And therefore, we respectfully submit that it has absolutely no support for going back into a prior Congress as to a bill that was never enacted. Your Honors, in the situation the government would have us look at, here we had a bill that came out of a committee. Nothing further ever happened to it. Was never referred to again in any place. The danger, as the congressional record shows, is of doing such a thing as that, aside from the vacuum that we're looking at. The Ways and Means Committee changed 51% in those 2 years and changed in chairmanship from Chairman Mills to Chairman Ullman. Next, we would respectfully suggest
to
the...
May I ask one question while it's right
yes,
on that?
Yes, sir.
Did the 1974 bill, what did that do with respect to regulated natural gas and natural gas sold under a fixed contract?
They had a provision for it, yes, sir.
For preserving or eliminating?
For preserving.
I see. So it was parallel.
Excuse me, sir.
So it was parallel in that regard.
In that regard, but again, without the transitional or, shall we say, cross-referencing language that picks up 11 and picks up 613 in that manner. And, Your Honor, it is to show that it is before this court. Now, much has been made about the mechanical difficulties. Principally, this mechanical difficulties is found in the concurring opinions in the tax court and the dissenting opinions in the application of the statute. We respectfully submit those mechanical difficulties are wholly illusory. They're simply not there. We would simply apply, and why the IRS did it, I cannot understand, except they started off wrong. They would simply apply the same technique that the lessor does today with respect to cost depletion. In other words, the lessor would have to do nothing more than he does today with respect to cost depletion in order to allocate this percentage depletion that he takes on his bonus over the actual production that he may receive in the future. And, of course, as Justice Weiss has pointed out, if there is no production in the future, the percentage depletion evaporates. So the mechanical difficulties, as all of the commentators have pointed out, are simply not there. And may I add, with respect to the some 11 or more commentators that have commented on the cases now before this court, I'm pleased to report they're all have come down in favor of the taxpayer's position.
Do you feel that weighs heavily in your favor?
Sir?
Do you feel that weighs heavily in your favor?
Well, Justice Rehnquist, I'd rather that be on our side than on the other side.
And are you happy to report that none of them is a student?
Sir?
Are you happy to report that none of them is a student?
No, sir, I cannot say that. I can say, though, to Your Honor, that about half of them are practitioners and half of them are students. But I would say the students' notes are very lucid and well done, and any practicing attorney would have been delighted to have been associated with them.
Unless he's on the other side of the case.
Lastly,
Mr. Colleague, before you go on, do I understand that you think that it would be appropriate to require the deduction then to be taken in the year of the actual production?
I think it would be, no, ma'am. I think, Justice O'Connor, it would be appropriate to take the percentage of depletion deduction in the receipt, in the time of the receipt of the dollar. It is possible to devise a method to take the deduction at a later period of time. But I do not believe that is in accordance with the teaching of the Herring case, which we believe is still vital and was not destroyed.
Well, wouldn't it be consistent with it and be a reasonable interpretation that the commissioner could make?
Yes, ma'am.
So perhaps even if we agreed with you on the gross income issue, it should be remanded to the court below to consider deference to the commissioner on that.
With all deference, Justice O'Connor, to the commissioner, when the commissioner has adopted a totally erroneous position, he is not entitled to prevail.
Well, maybe we could disabuse him of that position in the process.
I would hope, of course, the court would, Your Honor. Lastly, we would respectfully call the attention of the court to the fact that the farmers in the Suggs had actual production during the year of the receipt of their bonus. And so there is absolutely nothing in the statute that says that they cannot combine these two types of gross incomes from the property. The gross income that is truly gross income from the property in the form of a bonus and the dollars they receive from the percentage royalty. And put the two together and take their percentage depletion upon that. You can easily combine them and see whether or not the limitation has been enacted, violated. And so, therefore, we have an even simplistic method of applying the statute. What the taxpayers here are suggesting conforms with all of the decisions, the mosaic, almost Grecian mosaic, that this court worked out with respect to percentage depletion on bonuses over a very long period of time. It conforms with what Congress intended for the small producers. It is simple. It is logical. And the taxpayers should prevail.
May I ask you a question about your position? Supposing you had a lease with a very large producer.
Very large what, sir?
Very large producer. It's an independent producer, so it's not a retailer and all that stuff, which produced 10 barrels on December 31st, or the last day of the taxable year. And in the taxable year, it got an advance royalty of $10 million. And then it got very small payments, but very large production thereafter. Would it get the full deduction, under your view, in the first year?
Yes, sir, but then it would have to be spread over the large production, if I understand the question correctly, in the later years, and it would immediately violate the 3,000 or 2,000 barrel limit, and you would immediately in the next year restore a part of the depletion deduction to income. In other words, you estimate your recoverable reserves, Your Honor, and then you spread that. Say you're going to get since we're dealing in big figures, a million barrels a year for the next 10 years.
Right.
So you spread your bonus over that 10 years proportionately. And if you take your bonus and spread it to the next year and see how many dollars you're getting for that production, you immediately are able to see that you have gone over. You're in the second year, you've gone over your 2,000 barrel limitation, and so in that second year, you immediately restore the depletion you took in the first year back to income.
I think you've answered the question now.
Right.
Thank you.
Right.
Do you have anything further? Thank you, gentlemen. The case is submitted.